Here to present the status of ATSC 3.0 is Jerry Whitaker. Jerry Whitaker is Vice President of Standards Development at ATSC, supporting the network, supporting the work of the various ATSC technology and specialist groups, and assisting in the development of ATSC standards and related documents. He currently serves as Secretary of the Technology and Standards Group, the Secretary of the Technology Group on Next Generation Broadcast Television, and is closely involved in working in work relating to educational programs. Jerry is a fellow in the SBE, fellow in SMPTE. He has served as a board member and vice president of the Society of Broadcast Engineers. He is the author and editor of more than 35 books on technical topics. Please welcome back Jerry Whitaker.
Thanks so much. The photo there, if you had noticed, was me some years ago. That was before and after. But there are two available captions for that. I was on the phone with somebody at the studio. It's either "The signal's leaving here okay," or "A medium regular crust, pepperoni, green pepper, black olives, and onions." It's probably the latter. Also, I'm getting over a cold, so please indulge me, and I'll struggle through talking, but I hope you'll bear with me. Okay, so this morning, you heard a number of presentations on various aspects of ATSC 3.0. Hopefully, in this presentation, I'll take all of that and put it in a box and kind of give you the 30,000 foot level perspective. So the way I want to go through this is first give you an overview of ATSC activities. Most of you are familiar with ATSC, of course, but a little background probably is worthwhile. Then we'll look at specialist group activities where the work on ATSC 3.0 is underway, and document development status and next steps. I'll point out also that I had the opportunity over lunch to briefly look through the ATSC 3.0 implementation document that that Jay Adrick mentioned. Very good, very comprehensive. I encourage you to download it. So about the ATSC, it's a standards development organization for digital television. We've been around since 1983, formed as an industry group. We have about 150 members, and it's a broad range of members, and that's important because broadcasting today isn't just broadcasters. Of course, it takes receivers, and it takes a chain of implementers to make it work. Our mission is to create and foster implementation of voluntary standards and recommended practices to advance digital terrestrial television and facilitate interoperability. There are a number of ATSC members. I mentioned about 150. There are about 150. Many of them are shown here. Some of your organizations may well be represented. We are very pleased to have considerable broadcaster involvement in ATSC 3.0. And in standards development work, that's important because we're developing something for broadcasters, and to have them involved at the very basic level in terms of making fundamental decisions is critical. The overall organization is shown here. At the risk of doing a little inside baseball, I'll wade into this very briefly. I just want to point out there are three operating groups, if you will, three main operating groups: the implementation teams, Technology Group 1, and Technology Group 3. Technology Group 1 focuses on what we now call ATSC 1.0, the current system, and that work is ongoing. There is still some work that's being done with regard to ATSC 1.0. We updated A52, the audio standard, a year or so ago, and there are some additional tweaks that we'll probably be doing. Beyond that, there's recent discussion about whether some changes, enhancements to PSIP might be important or might be helpful in managing a repack and managing a transition. For example, would it be helpful for a flag to go up in PSIP telling the receiver changes have been made to the RF assignments in this region, rescan at midnight? So you get the idea that could be useful. Technology group three I'll focus on next. And here is a bit of an eye chart, but the only thing I want to point out here is the technology or the specialist groups on the top rung there, and we'll talk about those in a little more detail as we go forward. Within this structure, there are hundreds of engineers around the world working, and they have been working on this for several years now. So we have some pretty important and perhaps even obvious goals with regard to ATSC 3.0. Number one, we want to improve the TV viewing experience. We want to add value to the broadcasting service platform, extend the reach, add new business models, provide higher audio video quality, enable personalization and interactivity. We want to change, we want to address the consumer's changing habits and needs and desires. It's, I don't need to tell any of you in this room that the consumer of today is much different than it was 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago when ATSC 1.0 was developed. And the broadcast paradigm has changed. In the next system that's fielded by broadcasters, it has to reflect that new reality. So there's, again, focusing on the consumer, because any consumer product, if it's not consumer-focused, it will go absolutely nowhere, no matter how good it might be. So what we want to do for the consumer is maintain a top-tier, competitive picture and sound quality, competitive with what they can get elsewhere. And these days, elsewhere used to be cable, and now it's over the top. If we look at 4K transmission over the top, broadcasters need to have the tools so they can compete in that space. We want to reach the consumer with new devices, phones, laptop computers, notebooks, and so forth, not just the living room television set. We want to leverage the power of broadcasting and the internet. I'm going to drive this home later in more than just a few slides. We want to provide for a flexible and efficient use of the spectrum. That, of course, is, it's not an option. We have to be more spectrum efficient. And this isn't just in the U.S. This spectrum pressure is being seen elsewhere around the world. So there are new technologies, and we want to use those new technologies that are available to address these consumer needs. So what does a new system have to be? Well, it has to be flexible and robust, more efficiency, greater bits for the same amount of spectrum. We want to be able to trade off dynamically robustness for capacity. We want advanced audio and video coding. We want immersive audio, we want UHD, we want high color gamut, and so forth. And future capabilities. We've tried to build into ATSC 3.0 the mechanisms and hooks so that we don't have to face another major build out in the foreseeable future. Nothing is forever, of course, but we want to make this a system that we can evolve over time much more so than we've been able to do in the past. So here's the elevator pitch. ATSC 3.0 is the next generation broadcast television system. It provides significantly higher data capacity, flexible spectrum use, higher physical layer robustness, future extensibility, mobile handheld support, hybrid broadcast plus broadband services, advanced audio and video compoding, advanced audio and video compression, I should say, immersive audio, UHD video, interactivity and personalization, potential for new business models, and a path to the future of broadcasting. Going from the bottom to the top, this takes that big, long horizontal org chart and kind of turns it upside down, rotates it 90 degrees at least. Beginning at the bottom, these are in the blue are the specialist groups working on ATSC 3.0. S31 is focused on system requirements. S32 is the physical layer. S33 is management and protocols layer. S34 is applications and presentation. S36 is security. And then at the top, S37, conversion and redistribution. That is a newly formed specialist group, and the objective of that bunch of experts is to facilitate the transmission of ATSC 3.0 signals over MVPDs, cable and satellite systems. We're working closely with the cable and satellite industries to identify how they now have an infrastructure for ATSC 1.0. When ATSC 3.0 goes on the air, how do they get those signals? How do they process them? How do we make sure that what the broadcaster has sent along actually gets to the end of the line? The S31 specialist group developed early on in this process of ATSC 3.0 to identify use cases. There are a lot of use cases. Here are some of the more common ones that you'd expect. Flexible spectrum use, I touched on that earlier, robustness, mobile services, UHD, advanced audio, advanced advertising, and so forth. Get the idea. Advanced emergency alerting, I'll talk about that later. Here is the entire ATSC 3.0 systems put in one slide. And of course, you read these, typically read these drawings from the bottom up. At the physical layer, you can see on the broadcast, well, it's telling there's a broadcast in the broadband side, first of all. But on the broadcast side is the physical layer, the link layer protocol, and then internet protocol. Look over on the other side, you've got broadband. I'll talk in later slides about how we marry those two together. Above those physical stacks, you'll see a whole lot in common. At the top of the stack is HTML5. So the physical layer encompasses common system elements, bootstrap signaling, modulation encoding, waveforms, core broadcast services. And we can trade off, as I mentioned, robustness for capacity. You've probably seen this chart before. The red marks indicate various common operating modes for ATSC 3.0. The green dot is A53. So, of course, A53 is 19.4 megabits per second and a 6 megahertz channel, requirement of 15 dB C over N. It was a marvel for its day. Of course, it was some time ago. What we're looking at now is, for broadcasters, the ability to switch knobs or pull levers in order to go from the low side, the very low side, I shouldn't have done that, the very low side, this is the one I wanted, up here to the very high side. I can't even see it, but you get the idea. So there, and the blue line is Shannon's limit. We are perilously close to the Shannon limit. And that's a good thing, of course. The bootstrap signaling document is RA321. It's approved and published. It provides a robust synchronization, service discovery. It looks, it goes to the air and finds out, okay, what do we have? Do I have a signal? Okay, what's in that signal? It carries time and frequency coordination. It's a 5 megahertz bandwidth, minus 6 dB signal to noise is what that can be recovered at. I mean, that is literally in the weeds. That's pretty amazing in itself. The chart is shown there for the preamble, but that's a very powerful tool. That's essentially, it would be the BIOS, basic input in-out operating system. Every computer boots up. This is essentially the boot up for the RF channel. Now it passes that information on to A3 322, which is the physical AR protocol document, which introduces the concept of physical AR pipes. This is really a considerable departure, a radical departure from A53. It builds upon the idea that was kind of first hatched for broadcasters with A153, which is the mobile standard. And that is, you can carry two different signals that have completely different characteristics. A physical layer pipe is based on selections of modulation and coding, interleaving choices. You can transmit a highly robust, low-capacity signal at the same time you're transmitting a high-capacity signal intended for living room, you know, fixed applications. Up to 64 active PLPs simultaneously on a single RF channel. It's a very powerful system. Here's another new technology that new technology for broadcast for sure. Layer division multiplexing. It's a scheme that uses spectrum overlay to superimpose multiple physical layer signals with different power levels, error correction codes, and modulations for different services and reception environments. As you can see, I think we've been repowered here. Yeah. They're literally stacked on top of each other. For each LDM layer, 100% of the RF bandwidth, 100% of the time, are used in the emission. So you take the more robust signal, which is the easiest to decode, subtract it, and what's left is another signal. Very, very powerful and facilitates future extension that is up until this point has just been absolutely impossible. A322, the physical layer protocol, I think you everybody as registrants has access to the slides. I won't go through these, but that's what A322 does. So the physical layer meets the needs of broadcasters for flexibility, robustness, and efficiency. We want to expand the service offerings and provide coverage areas that are customized as needed for different transmission requirements, different reception environments, and a physical layer that can evolve over time. We really don't want to go through another transition. Next, we'll move up to the the management layer. Management and protocols layer encompasses service delivery and synchronization, service announcement and personalization, interactivity and redistribution, watermarks. Watermarks are interesting. I'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to the summary of where documents are. Watermark is a trigger. It's a it's information that's embedded early on in the process prior to emission, of course. And it's designed to survive the treacherous path from the receive antenna to the display device, which may include things like HDMI cables where certain signals may or may not get through. That's another powerful tool that's new to ATSC 3.0. IP transport will be used for delivery of both streaming and broadcast delivery of content. Of course, ATSC 1.0 uses the MPEG-2 transport system. It's video-centric. It was and continues to be a good technology, but IP is far more powerful in, if for no other reason than it's ubiquitous. ATSC Mobile introduced the concept of IP mobile for broadcast, and that worked quite well. Let's see, common elements of the management layer would be IP transport, use of ISO BMFF as content delivery for streaming, and use of UTC for synchronization and buffer management. And synchronization and buffer management are important for a lot of reasons, but to the consumer, one of the primary reasons, of course, would be lip sync. So we want to solve that problem before it starts. The benefits of IP transport, I'd say the first thing is that broadcasting then will no longer be an independent silo with regard to the the ecosystem that exists today. IP takes advantage of the evolution speed of the internet, which is truly astounding. It enables new types of hybrid services, the ability to seamlessly incorporate niche content by going from broadcast to broadband and back. And of course, that synchronization that I talked about earlier, that makes it all possible. So we have with IP the ability to create new business models. And as much as I'd rather focus on technology, the users of the standard, that was to say broadcasters, need to focus on management issues, business issues, and so finding ways to reach new markets and finding new ways to mine the old markets are important things. So what can we do with IP transport? Well, we can do localized ad insertion. And those are things that have not been available to broadcasters. We had a document, a standard, ATSC did, that was a part of PSIP that was intended for a specialized ad insertion. And it worked, but it was kind of before its time. And it was a little too complicated. With this marriage of the internet, it solves a host of challenges that with a one-way system, it was just really hard to manage. So the applications and presentation layer encompasses video and audio coding, presentation logic, runtime environment, and accessibility. I mentioned the hybrid delivery. Here are some use cases. The main audio-video component is delivered by broadcast and an alternate component like a different language by broadband. Or the main program is delivered by broadcast and alternate interstitials are delivered by broadband, and that's the ad insertion thing. Or even a temporary handoff from broadcast to broadband for fades. Okay, interesting stuff. These are all possibilities. Moving to video, I mentioned UHD, 4K delivery. Is not just a key goal, it will happen with ATSC 3.0. Of course, it requires the broadcaster to take the lever on that Shannon drawing and kind of push it toward the upper side. But even if you add a 15 dB C over N, you can get enough bandwidth to get a UHD signal out. Enhanced HD also, wide color gamut, high dynamic range, scalable coding. I've got a chart on that in a second. Targeting small screens and large screens. And you know, it's interesting when we talk about HD, there's a big focus on HD on small screens, which when you stop and think about it, it's pretty astounding because it wasn't that long ago that we were just getting HD on the air, let alone getting it to portable devices. HEVC, main 10 profile, that's that codec that we'll be using for ATSC 3.0, that's no surprise. It's another one of those 2x improvements over AVC, which was a 2x improvement over MPEG-2. Those are generalizations. The folks from Harmonic would have accurate numbers, and you may have seen them this morning, but at any rate, just that's the back of the envelope thing. HDR is under discussion now, high dynamic range. It's the subject of considerable discussion. I'll leave it at that. And we have lots of fun, spirited discussions. The things we're evaluating are video quality, backward compatibility, and the production workflow and other items. This chart, which is you know, the baseline of 100%, is 1080p. It illustrates how what the costs are, the bit costs are for various visual improvement schemes. 4K is, you know, it takes a lot of bits. There's no doubt about that. But if you look at high frame rate, high dynamic range, color gamut, and 10-bit depth, those are pretty modest requirements. So the bottom line is you can put out an enhanced HD signal for a very reasonable amount of bits. So you can significantly improve the viewing experience for essentially nothing by adding HDR, color gamut, and so forth. Audio, I mentioned enhanced immersive audio. I've got a couple of charts in a minute about that. The big change here, other than the 3D impact where we add azimuth and a distance perspective, the big change is that channels go away and objects come in, and metadata makes it all work. We send the objects to the receiver, to the decoder. We send the metadata, and the receiver knows what it's capable of. It knows how many speakers it has. If it's a premium system, it knows where the speakers are, because it can, it can determine that within some, reasonable compromise. And then it can take the decoded signal and put the channels, the audio, the objects where it needs to be. Very powerful system. So ATSC 3.0 audio is targeted to fixed devices and mobile devices, as you'd expect. And the mobile devices are a challenge because you've got teeny tiny speakers or headphones and a lot of variability in headphones. But there again, the device knows what it's got. And so that decision can be made at the device, as opposed to at the station, essentially setting it for the lower, or the program producer setting for the lowest common denominator, which doesn't do anybody any good. Let's see, there's all audio-only content, in addition to, of course, audio and video, hybrid broadcast, broadband, normalization of loudness and dynamic range. We're fixing this one before the box goes out the door. I guarantee it. Okay. There are two logos up there. We've standardized on what we have. Did I do that? We have developed published candidate standards for two audio coding systems, the next generation systems. One is Dolby AC4 and the other is the MPEG-H Audio Alliance. So when it comes to immersive audio, 7.1.4 is the most widely accepted, reasonable compromise between something that is so simple it doesn't really give you an immersive experience, and something that's so crazy that you never find it anywhere, 22.2 channels. Well, you'd find it in a theater, maybe, but 7.1.4 is... All right, so that sounds good until you look at the living room here. Now, most everybody's got the... you've got the left, center, right, and subwoofer. Okay, all right. We got the surround speakers out here. Now, those holes in the roof and the ceiling, now that's a problem. Well, there are ways around that, fortunately. And here's a couple of them. Soundbars. If you've listened to the demos at NAB or CES, and perhaps elsewhere, 3D soundbar technology has come a long way, and it's actually quite impressive. My personal favorite is the upward driver over here, illustrated here and here, where this is one of the surround speakers, and that speaker is literally aimed at the ceiling, and it bounces back and gives you the elevation. And now it's not just isn't just rotating the speaker that makes it work. There's a there's a magic sauce in there, but the rendition is quite impressive. So you can get 7.1.4 without doing something crazy and getting out a a drywall saw. The application environment is built on W3C and HTML. Here again, hybrid delivery, merging broadcast and broadband. And this gives us dynamic ad insertion, personalized graphics, interactivity, synchronized second screen applications, and immersive audio control of user tracks. We'll talk about this a little bit when it comes to accessibility. And I should have put that first and made it bold, audience measurement capabilities. So content could be streaming, linear streaming, or delivered in non-real time and cached locally. One of the problems in the past with NRT content, non-real time delivered content, is it requires storage on the receiving device. And there was a time when storage was a expensive thing. Clearly, it's not so much anymore. Interactive services, we're developing a interactive application environment that enables interoperability receiver runtime environment and apps that producers make, apps like you'd have on your phone. And the goal, as I said, is to align with W3C as much as possible and to make those broadcast applications very similar to what you'd write for a smartphone. Maybe it's the same. If not, it's very close. Now, there are some things we need to add. They're pretty obvious. Change the channel, parental settings, record this and play that. So we're working with the organizations that specialized in web-related technologies, namely W3C and others, to make sure that we provide the necessary hooks to make it work. Here's an example. Now, this in this case, the ad, linear ad, is delivered over the air, while the brand logo and the dynamic image here and this interactive stuff is delivered via broadband. Now, this could all be delivered via broadcast. In this particular example, only this is broadcast, the rest is broadband. Now, for anything interactive, you need, obviously, a return channel. And so the broadband part of that closes that loop. Here's another example. The broadcast here is linear. All of this could be broadcast, but in this particular mock-up is broadband. The only thing that needs to be broadband is that. You get the idea here, broadcast, broadband. So marrying those two technologies is really, really important, and it gives broadcasters and developers a whole new tool that we never had before. Accessibility is obviously a very important element, and it's been addressed in ATSC 3.0 from the very beginning. And it's more than just public service, and it's more than just rules and regulations, but it attracts and holds and educates and informs an audience. So among the new public service capabilities will be robust audio and closed caption transmission even when the picture fails. We could put, for example, captioning and audio into one of those very robust PLPs. Improved audio intelligibility for hearing impaired. I touched on this earlier. Imagine if you had an ability on a remote control to increase just the dialogue. And that would help a lot of people, regrettably myself included, understand what's going on, because as you age, or if you have hearing problems anyway, you want to focus on the dialogue, and sometimes with the effects, with the whole mix in present, it's difficult to do that. Continued support for video description services, of course. So the ATSC 3.0 feature set supports visually impaired, hearing impaired, and emergency alerts, which we'll look at now. Broadcasters are very, obviously, involved in emergency alerting for a very long time. And we want to expand the capabilities of broadcasters through ATSC 3.0 with regard to this. Provide a more robust and reliable public warning system that is independent of the cellular network. And leverage broadcasters' hardened facilities. Broadcasters have been doing this, as I said, for a long time. They know the drill, and they know how to stay on the air and reach their viewers and listeners. And this also offloads data from the cellular network, which in times of emergency is really best for point-to-point voice communication, not for sending the same file to 100,000 people at different points in time. So there are opportunities for broadcasters to enhance the station brand for weather and public safety information, and provide a pipeline for extensive knowledge of disaster issues as they unfold and what viewers can do about it. Advanced Emergency Alerting, AEA, is what we're calling this. It's designed to fit reach portable and fixed receivers. There is also an optional, robust AEA wake-up signal for all types of receivers that are in a sleep mode. Okay. The advisability of your television set, you know, waking up at 1 a.m. and, you know, flashing a warning sign, one could imagine that viewers could find that disconcerting. However, if it's because a hurricane is brewing, maybe that's not a good example. Let's say a flood is coming, the river has overflowed its banks, you put up with being awakened in the middle of the night. Alert messages are capable of targeting receivers in specific locations for those receivers who know where they are. And I would say that most, if not all, portable receivers know where they are. And even fixed receivers would probably know their zip code if, for example, one way would be, of course, what is their IP address? That gets it down to a region. Not entirely infallible, but during setup, if part of the setup mechanism was please enter your zip code, then at least knows where it knows in broad terms where it is. So here are a few examples. You've seen these before, but rich media content. And here's a case where this could be all over the delivered entirely from the broadcast, or from a combination of broadcast and broadband, where, for example, let's say the map is over the air, but the satellite weather graphics and, get on Route 5 and go west, is delivered by broadband because it's very specific. Again, it could all come, if there's no need for interaction, it can all come from the broadcaster, but it doesn't have to. When ATSC 1.0 was developed years ago, the thought of security for television set was kind of like not on the radar. Now it's not so much off the radar. But beyond that, security offers new business opportunities like subscription, monthly fee, or a freemium, if you will. So, give us your information, name, address, email address, and you can have this stuff for free. So it opens up some new possibilities. Service models here, I just want to kind of show you, again, driving home the broadcast broadband option. The light blue is broadcast, and the dark blue here is delivered via broadband. I mean, it's just, one kind of a snapshot of what's possible, but you get the idea. This chart, pardon me, this chart is provided by Pilot NAB. You may have seen it at the convention back in April. The idea is it shows kind of the transition, what can be reused, what needs to change a little bit, what needs to be replaced. It's almost a mixture, kind of a third, with regard to all those three. So it's not a minor change by any stretch of the imagination, but then again, it's not throw everything out and start over. So I need to give you the disclaimer here. I'm going to talk about status of documents very briefly. But I should tell you that selections of technologies are subject to approval of the technology group and ultimately the membership of ATSC. So it's not done till it's done. Also, batteries are not included. Your mileage may vary. And past performance is not indicative of future returns. I'll mention candidate standard a couple times in the slides that follow. The candidate standard is kind of the first of three major steps in going to a completed, finished standard. It's the point at which we publish the document and we ask companies, vendors, broadcasters to go out and try it. and then they bring back what they found, and we either declare victory and move on, or we fix as needed, better explain this or add this or take away that. So it's a big step. So the document status, I'll go through these pretty quickly. Again, I think these slides are available to attendees, so you could pull them down and look at them. But I'm just going to hit a few high points, and the high points will be the documents that are approved and published. A321 system discovery and signaling, that's that bootstrap that we talked about. A322 is the physical layer protocol. That is done and dusted, completed, posted. Let's see, we have a number of other documents. The working draft is essentially what it sounds like. The candidate standard I mentioned briefly. We have a lab performance test plan, which is moving through the process as well. The link layer protocol, link layer protocol A330 is approved and published. So that takes the first two layers on that first protocol chart that I showed you and, puts a green check next to them, done. Looking down to A334 and 335, that's the Audio Watermark Commission and Video Watermark Commission, that's done. That's that protocol that gets a signal from the broadcaster to the display device. Moving forward, number of documents and candidate standard status, as you see. A lot of these will move forward to the next step within the next few months. I'll also point out that we're working on a conversion and redistribution document that will be developed by that S37 group, which is the group that's working with the cable and satellite providers, and additional RPs is needed. So looking at next steps, the path to ATSC began more than 6 years ago. We've made a lot of progress. There's still more work to be done, but things are moving forward nicely. ATSC 3.0, as I've explained, is a suite of standards, 20 or so documents. Each standard moves through the process independently. Most will move to candidate standard this year, and indeed that has happened. Final approval of most documents is expected sometime between now and the middle of next year. I would expect that we'll go to NAB in April with almost everything done. Of course, the FCC is considering authorizing the use of ATSC 3.0, and ATSC 3.0 has been selected for use in South Korea. So to sum up, ATSC 3.0 will not be backward compatible with the legacy system. It acknowledges the changes of user environments and needs. It understands broadcast spectrum regulation issues. It supports viability of new business models for broadcasters, and it's flexible to accommodate future improvements and developments. And that is my talk. I'm happy to answer any questions. We've got a few minutes.
I'm curious if other countries in East and Southeast Asia and India are going to adopt ATSC 3 or are interested in it. I know China seems to want to become the new center of television, but they have a proprietary enclosed multi-carrier system which differs from that of neighboring countries, making it a closed Great Wall. And is the Great Wall cracking open?
Well, it's interesting. We have, I alluded to earlier, a good amount of interest in ATSC 3.0 worldwide. There is a sizable interest in China. They participate, they have submitted a system that for a in-band on-channel return link, if you will, that wouldn't work, for the U.S. Paradigm, but it could work elsewhere. So they are interested and they're contributing. I think the real way to gauge, interest is, do they show up? And they show up and they participate. And so it's, I'm encouraged with regard to that. Going forward, we're trying to bring as many different ideas in so that for each region, they're sure to have differences that, are dictated by a variety of considerations. But if we can make the core pretty much the same, then it just is better for everybody.
You mentioned earlier on about existing work going on with ATSC 1.0, and you brought up in particular the possibility of adding a flag in PSIP to tell a receiver to do a channel rescan. And I was just curious, is that a capability that should exist now in current ATSC receivers?
No. That would obviously only apply to newly sold receivers. But if we look at how many receivers are sold each year, I mean, there's millions of them. And if we could get that in to the point at which the rolling transition, however long that might be, rolls into a particular market, if for a period of a couple of years, 2-3 years, that capability has been built into receivers, then you know what? It's a little bit of a help. And if it's a simple enough change, if there's something we can do that just moves that process along, makes it a little easier, then the thought is it's worth doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Me?
Oh, you alluded to a little bit early on the consumer side of this question. Are there any plans anywhere, either with ATS3 or with the repack, of getting any sort of marketing going to the general public and the consumers? Because as Rumsfeld pointed out in the slide earlier, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And they're going to be getting hit pretty heavy with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, that's beyond the scope of ATSC. However, Jay had mentioned in his talk, he mentioned the group Pearl and broadcaster organizations. The broadcasters, I know, have talked about how do they manage the transition from the standpoint of just consumer education, so the initial work has been to bring broadcasters up to speed. Clearly, there's going to be a need for a lot of consumer education, and that's and the good news is, the broadcasters can do that anytime they want for as long as they want, and it costs them next to nothing because they own they own that delivery medium. So it's imminently doable, but it has to be a logical, thought-out program. And I know that those discussions are taking place, not in the ATSC as such, but by broadcast organizations.
Is there going to be an automatic discovery mode so that the receiver is constantly scanning in the background for new RF channels and adding them to the table?
Well, for ATSC 3.0, one would imagine that that consumer devices built to receive ATSC 3.0 would, number one, also have an ATSC 1.0 receiver, and would on their own have some channel scan mechanism. That is a receiver design, a receiver implementation issue, which is something that ATSC doesn't get into because we delegate that. We don't delegate it. We refer it to the Consumer Technology Association, because that's their domain. They are working, and they have been working on ATSC 3.0 receiver-related issues, and that's certainly one part of it. And the question is, how many tuners do you have? What is the rescan? How can we do a rescan that's faster? For example, if the receiver knows where it is, it knows the zip code or it knows the general area, it could go off to a database, since it's got two-way connectivity, and find the new channels without actually having to do, the 10-minute scan of everything that's possible. So there are a lot of possibilities there, but that's really a Consumer Technology Association project. We okay on time?
Okay. This IP connection to the set, because I have like 100 questions on that. Do we actually need that connection to the set to make it work? What happens if you don't have it? Then how do we prevent excess data charges to the consumer that may surprise them?
Well, we don't need an IP connection, an internet connection to the set to make it work. The broadband availability is one use case scenario. There's also a use case scenario where there is no broadband connection. There is no two-way connectivity. I mean, the three possibilities are never connected to the internet, always connected to the internet sometimes. And each one of those gives you, depending on how you rank them, more or less capabilities. For example, the receiver, through the signaling, will know what it can do. It knows what's available, it knows what functionality it has, and it will not present to the user things that it cannot do. For example, that shopping example that I had. A receiver that has no internet connectivity won't show that, you know, click here to order this. Even if all it was delivered via broadcast, it won't show it because it can't act on it because it doesn't have an internet connectivity. Now, the larger question of the internet connectivity and how a consumer gets that to work and pay for it, I mean that's beyond the scope of ATSC. But the assumption has been, I think, a safe assumption, that going forward, most receiving devices will have internet connectivity at least on an occasional basis. Okay? Thank you very much.